Okay, we're ready to begin this evening's meeting of the Finance and Facilities Committee, August 25th, 2014, at 6:30. Would you please take a moment, review the minutes, and make sure that they meet the approved. And I bet Carolyn will come up with it. These are the adjusted minutes in the new year.
New minutes.
Do you have an extra copy?
Okay.
No, give them to those guys. I'm a carpet bagger. I'm not.
When Carolyn copied and pasted from the last meeting, she didn't change, so the attendees did not change.
It's easy for me to figure that out because I didn't see it here.
Shame on you, Joe.
Your presence was felt. Okay, so the first order of business then this evening, at the last finance meeting, Joe asked you to put together some numbers in terms of what state financing looks like, state revenues look like over the past several years, 5 years in particular. And while I was doing that, I thought, well, why not throw in federal revenue also? So, on a cash basis, which is what you see in this 2014 column, that's what we received as of June 30th on a cash basis. It's expected, though, that you see this bilingual program. We expect close to $200,000 by the time July and August roll through. So let me just
August the year end?
No, June 30th is the year end, but the state always has a tendency, if you will, to play games with our revenues, and so they will prorate a program. They will deliberately delay a disbursement until July and August. So this has been going on for a number of years. When it became really a problem was 2010-09, and I think part of 2008 too. It was a mess in terms of where we were getting money. So Paul asked me to just give you a brief explanation in terms of what cash basis is, and that is the way that we do our financial presentations that you receive every month. And essentially what it is the recognition of revenue and expenditures as you either receive the revenues or as you expend the funds. And I think we have several finance folks in the room here. Am I anticipating any questions on that last statement?
None. And when you said 200,000, not another 200, but a total of
200,000.
So another 100,000.
Yeah. About that.
Okay.
And we'll see where it comes in. So these are the numbers. What I really think we should first of all mention is the general state aid and how those numbers have changed over the years. And you'll look back in 2000. I don't have data out here, but 9 and 10, you notice it was down rather dramatically from 11, although not far from 12. 13 and 14, these are the years where general state aid was prorated, and also the federal government started to pick up general state aid as part of the era where the federal government pitched in and was helping states financially. So you'll see that on the federal side also. So, in total, you know, this year we received $1.3 million in general state aid. Something I also want to mention, I was at a business manager's meeting today, and it's been pretty quiet in Springfield, and that concerns everyone in terms of them making a decision until we don't know, and we're thinking there are a lot of decisions that are not going to happen until the governor's race has been decided in November. So, you know, things like the income tax, the 67% increase in income tax from a number of years ago. Mm-hmm. That's due to go away halfway through this budget year. So they told us what we're going to get, what we can expect. That doesn't mean we're going to get it. So what I did, as I said, I identified the general state aid, and then I also identified as many of the individual special ed, grants and aid, categorical funding. You've heard me use a number of different terms. We have private facility, extraordinary, you know, you can read as well as I can right down the left-hand column in terms of what these different types of revenue sources are. And then the amount of revenue that we received within those particular areas over the past 5 to 6 years.
Can you spend just a bit, Bob, on personnel?
Yes.
Personnel.
Back in about the mid-70s, and this is one of the major complaints that you'll hear from finance folks in the state of Illinois, the legislature in Springfield decided to reimburse districts for personnel costs associated with special education. They targeted $9,000 for a teacher and $3,500 for aide in terms of what a district will be reimbursed for those personnel that are specifically associated with a particular special ed program. Those numbers since the 1970s have never increased. So what I get is I get $9,000 for every teacher and $3,500 reimbursement for every staff member associated with special ed programs.
Now, one of the moved items here, needle movers, that we don't get, maybe you can explain that, is in 2011 was the Early Childhood Block Grant. So that was a big number relative to what we're getting.
It went away.
Right.
It went away, so did reading improvement, so did school safety.
Yeah, but the big one is the block grant.
The early childhood.
I mean, that's $400,000 roughly.
Different.
So, and that went away because it's no longer qualified for it, or?
It just went away. It just stopped funding.
Everybody 100%.
Yes. Okay. Now, my bet is there's other districts that get more money, but where we're at is that's our distribution from the state every year.
Fair enough. I just wanted to understand that it's a big magnitude, that's a material change, so I figured it needed to be explained. What I did is I took your numbers and took that number out because it's such a big number out of each year, and then compared the state grant, the state aid based on that, and looked at those numbers. So,
for what kind of comparison, Jeff?
To get a better understanding, because that one's such a, when you start looking at that number, it's such a big number of your, it's 10%, it's over 10% of your, in that year, it's over 10% of what you see. And you don't get it anymore. So to start comparing apples to apples, look going back from all the way back to 09, I took a spreadsheet and said, okay, let's take that out for each year, and then let's start seeing how we're doing in receiving state aid. And my read of it is, and I know there's trepidation about going forward for very good reasons, but I have less trepidation when I see these numbers. The rhetoric from Springfield, clearly you have concern, but you're seeing consistency amongst the grand number, and I think that's a good thing.
Mm-hmm. That we've adjusted for that.
Mm-hmm.
That point that Bob made, I just pulled this out of the IASB circle that. Mm-hmm. What they said is that there could be a $1 billion cut for FY2015 to public education,
mm-hmm,
with that if the temporary income tax hike expires.
And general state aid is the one that we're really most concerned with.
Right. That's the one that's going to, if there's a cut, that's top line is going to get hit.
Right out of here.
Okay.
And that we're all going to do it.
That we're right on the, there's three different funding mechanisms for general state aid the way it's calculated. We're right on the tip. And if you take $1,000,003 divided by 3,600 kids, I think it's about $300 or $400 a kid. Versus $6,100 that some districts receive. So we receive, as a per child allotment, really very little in terms of general
standing. I thought this is great because, quite frankly, what I didn't have when you're speaking was the relative nature. And the relative nature, I mean, it's big, but it sounded bigger to me. You know, this sounds smaller. 1.3 is a big number by itself for someone like me, but there's a lot of other state aid that this district gets. And it's been pretty consistent outside of the block grant going away, for the most part, in 2011.
And the one that you don't see here is regular student transportation, around $40,000 to $18,000. Back in 2008, 7, 6, and years before that, the district used to receive $300,000 or $400,000 a year annually in regular student transportation. So we've lost most of that.
And you can
is that just funding formulas?
Well, they say it was driven by the Democrats in the city of Chicago, where their kids, generally take public transportation to and from school, so they don't really care about transportation reimbursement. That's what I heard.
Okay. But, I mean, they just lowered it overall, or is it something...
Oh, everybody got reduced. Now, they've maintained special education transportation. As a matter of fact, it's actually increased.
Mm-hmm. Not last year, it didn't increase unless it was a cash basis. It was down 2.49%.
Right, but if you go back to 2009, we're only getting about $225,000.
Yeah, or you look at the average, which is 368, you're at up 26% above the average.
But he said that we're behind in that, right? That we'll expect something still to come in.
Well, we can expect it. I don't know that we're going to get any more
transportation. That was the bilingual.
Just that one grade.
Okay.
That's the bilingual. No, I pulled special education out, transportation, to look at that because of the transportation discussion you've had before. And you have seen a decrease, but overall, for the average over the six-year period, you're still at 26% above that. But it is an area of concern when you see a decrease of almost 2.5%.
Well, I think part of this is that it seems arbitrary. And that's part of what I think you're saying, Bob, is that we don't know because there isn't a lot of information leading up to the decision that's just made, and we've had that happen before. So that kind of capricious nature of it is what, you know, I think you've been reacting to over time with the budgets and being more conservative about it.
I think it's my job to be fiscally conservative. So, if there's no other questions on state revenue, I was just going to give you basically the same rundown in terms of what's happened with federal revenue, which is the next question that you have. Again, same type of basis. I try to break it down by program. And then spread it through 2014 all the way back to 2009. And one of the first things you're going to notice is a national school lunch program. We didn't join NSLBP until 2012 when we started our association with MarCorp. So before that, we didn't get any reimbursement, at least for the national school lunch program, until 2012. And you can look the way it's grown over the past couple of years. And then I located the number for the breakfast program. Last year we received almost 26.7 reimbursement just for the breakfast program. So as you can see, we've grown from $36,000 in 2009 to $310,000 just in federal reimbursement for our breakfast and lunch programs. These are the other, again, I don't think I need to read it for you, but if they go from low income, types of different education IDA flow through and so forth. I did want to show you something in particular here. Mike, could you scroll up just a bit, please? Down here under ERA, this is the federal money that I was talking about when the states really got in a dire crunch in 2008 and 2009. There's the flow through money. There's a general state aid education stabilization, Patrick, that you asked about. That's why our federal revenue increased over those early couple of years, and our state revenue decreased. So that's where our additional state aid came from $290,000 to $246,000 back in 2010. Total funding for ERA. And also, I need to mention, too, that the Hadley addition that we put on back about 4 or 5 years ago, that was built with about $770,000 of federal money. So I just wanted to mention
special education classrooms.
Yeah, we spent about $1.1 million on that three classroom addition, and 770 some thousand of it came from the federal government. So I've just tried to identify all the programs that I could from a state and federal perspective, and I do have to check this emergency immigrant assistance. We think there may be a coding error. We think it probably belongs down in Title III English language. I met with Katie this morning, and that was one of the questions that she brought to my attention. Overall, the numbers are what they are, the bottom numbers. But there may be some variations between the numbers.
Bob, can you send this, I don't know, to the finance, these two spreadsheets as individual PowerPoint so we can save it in our Google Docs.
I think we did, didn't we? Didn't we save send those docs?
Were they on the board book?
Yeah, they're on the board book.
I can download them.
You can download them into
Excel or PDF.
Excel would be awesome.
It would have been awesome this weekend.
I'll send it to you.
Thank you.
You know what? That brings up a good point, though, especially for us finance people. I mean, if you have the, I could tell you that in the spreadsheet. And I was going to ask you Sunday morning, but I did my own. It saved me some time. So if you're not afraid to send it to finance people, please send a spreadsheet so we can do some analysis. Thanks.
That'd be great.
Okay.
Tom, thank you so much for doing this. This is great information.
It was good work to do, and I think it's important work to share with the finance committee and the board for that matter in terms of, although there's not really a significant portion of our budget, there are certainly a portion of our budget. State revenue is, if it's $3 million, $3.4 million out of a $50 million budget, it's 4, 5, or 6%. So.
Yep, you know, I appreciate it because it gives you the relative nature of those dollars, of those programs.
Mm-hmm.
We talk about them, and you understand the relative nature of them is very important.
It does show a consistency. Which you know you think that it's big swings, and it's on a holistic standpoint it's pretty consistent. So yeah, great spreadsheet.
So the next order of business then this evening is a rationale of investment options. Again, that was a request that we had last meeting, and so I tried to create a brief board report along with some attachments for you to take a look at. I don't know if you had an opportunity to get into all of them. But per board policy, it is the assistant superintendent's responsibility. He is also the district chief investment officer. There are a couple of functions that we are to annually do, if you will. And one of them is just to review our investment options. You know, I gave you a report, I think, 2 weeks ago or 4 weeks ago in terms of who we do our business with to make sure that we had, that their houses were in order, that we had the appropriate registration documents and the audit documents. This was just another sort of review of board policy 4.3 operational services. And then also I went in and downloaded the Illinois Public Funds Investment Act to give you some very specific language in terms of what I'm responsible for and what I'm not responsible for. Basically, I am responsible to provide for the safety, liquidity, and appropriate yield for a particular investment, with safety being the foremost concern. I was telling Paul last week or the week before that back when times were pretty wild in terms of finances, there were business managers in Minnesota, Michigan, and California that bet on the stock market or bet on some unusual things other than taking a very conservative approach to investments. And it blew up on them. And basically some of the districts actually went bankrupt because of it. So I do take a very fiscally conservative approach. You do see the finance report on a monthly basis. As I stated, it's safety, liquidity, and yield that I'm particularly concerned about. I also wanted you to be aware that for older board members or more senior board members, we use...
Veteran.
Season. You feel very old all of a sudden.
Well, everybody's about the same age.
You feel like a
hey, hey.
Hey.
Some of us are on the floor.
I'm on the older. I get it.
Okay, so we use PMA, okay? And it's an investment firm that assists me with budgeting, cash flow projections, as well as investment options. And most of our investment options are held with the Illinois School District Liquid Asset Fund. And that is a group of board of directors that every 5 years or so, they go out and they get an RFP for a firm to manage those investments. What it is a group of 800 or 900 school districts. If we're going to say the state of Illinois, it's probably 800 school districts. And we pool our funds to get greater buyer's ability. And so that's who essentially, they go out, they do business with about 1,200 banks nationally. I talked to Fennell, our representative, with them today. They have a reach of about 1,200 banks that they go out and regularly deal with. You'll see a lot of our investments that are at 249, 249.4, right underneath that $250,000 threshold, so we don't exceed our insurance allotments or abilities. So they go out and they price these things whenever investments come up. They're out there actively pursuing to get us the best investment return that we can. Now, let's face it, investments have been horrible for about the past 5 years, and they run anywhere from 0.1% to 0.4% right now. And as I've stated in previous board reports, I remember when I got here 7 or 8 years ago, we were getting $1,200,000 in investment revenue, and now we're lucky. I think we got $111,000.
Here's my question on that, and that's, you know, it's correlated to the interest rates. You've stated that many times. I don't understand it. My question is, you use PMA, and that this is the discussion you have in here, and you can see it in the monthly report and consent agenda where our money's invested. So we clearly have a view that we can examine it, you know, exposing us to that. When I read the report and all the responsibilities, safety first and all that, right on, perfect for our district, 100% behind you. In my brain, I'm thinking, what? And I don't want to get into your daily, you know, sit down with your daily. That's your job. I'll go to my job and cause my problems there instead of here. But are you getting presented from banks and other institutions that are saying, hey, let me help you earn 5 more bips, 10 more bips. And do you take those presentations and, you know, where are you? Do you not get them? Because if you don't get them, I think you got to reach out to our partners who are on there, besides PMA, which is MB, Wintrust Bank, and these others, and say, you know, do you guys have something for me? Because there's a lot of money here,
right,
and every bip adds up. And to me, competition is always how you drive this up. And to me, I want to make sure that's happening. And that's my question to you going forward as I'm a board member. You know, what are you doing regarding that? Let's see if we can, every bit matters. If I was getting 10% return, I want 10.01. You know, if I'm getting 14 bips, give me 16 bips.
I do not.
Bob, just to parlay up a little bit with Joe, he's on the... He's on that side. I've been trying, and I try probably once every 7 days, try to get expense ratios and expense analysis off PMA's funds, and I just can't pull it. I don't know if there's, you know, Joe's talking about the PMA work and they're chasing revenue. I can't seem to find any. I can't find any expense ratios or any fees that are charged from the PMA. You know, yield net of fees.
I spoke with them today because I anticipated that question. And in the old days, when times were good and everybody was getting 4, 5, or 6% on their money, they were basically charging 0.25% on a point or 25 basis points. They're at on average 1/10% now in terms of what their take is on them managing our funds.
So they're taking 10 basis points. We're getting 14. They're getting 10.
It's pretty high.
Is that right?
On top of the active management.
Well, the amounts that you see on the investment schedule are the amounts that we're actually earning on the investment.
Right. So,
so that's net of the fees.
I'm assuming it's net of the fees.
It should be. So
24.
We're getting 4. They're getting a 24%.
But to Joe's point, I mean, if
that's where you start computing.
Yeah, right? That's where MB comes in and says, hey, I can give you 7.5 yield at 3 basis points, and we're getting 10 with PMA. I mean, there's alpha right there.
Right, and that to me. That's my question. Is what are we doing, Bob? What are you doing to see what the best deal we can? I know the marketplace. I don't want to compare it to when interest rates, you know, 2006, when interest rates were really high. I want to know what is competition doing today. And I'll have that theme again later in your agenda. Because I think when I'm presented something, I need to know that. I want to know what it's compared to. We did that very well with MB on our discussion of the bonds.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and they did a great presentation. You brought two people in here. That's great.
Can I ask a clarifying question? The understanding of PMA for me is that they help our district to analyze and budget going into the year to identify those all those different aspects that what's the word I'm looking for, different criterion that are going to impact our budget one way or another. So I see them in a consultative role doing that. So here's the my question is, are you asking, does MB Financial do that as well?
No, and if you look at the divide up of all the investments,
right,
you can get both. They're not going to pull that services from you if you move.
No, I'm not suggesting that they won't. But I
I'm not asking for that. Mm-hmm. I'm saying here's our funds invested. What's the dollar amount?
It's called an RFI, Eric. It's called an RFI. You go out to investment communities or bank and say, I mean, literally, plop, here's the RFI. District 41, here's everything that we have to follow. You know,
well,
double
you can
A,
do that.
Blah, blah, blah.
And I'm not necessarily suggesting that.
Yeah.
And you can do that, but I'm not suggesting that.
But what I heard your question to Bob that I want to clarify in terms of PMA's work for us is, are we making an assumption that they're not doing what you're asking, which is to go out and with these, the reason we went to this kind of this approach in terms of them doing the work is because they were going to be vetting that in an ongoing way. So I guess the question for me would be, do we know that they're not doing that?
No, you don't know. I mean, they're managing it too. There's mm-hmm. a cost to manage.
Right.
So
right.
Are you saying, do I know they're giving you the best rate?
Yeah.
No.
But do we know that they...
because we did that before doesn't mean on August 25th that the marketplace is saying that's the best rate.
So I just want to understand the question.
I will tell you that PMA calls me on a fairly regular basis, particularly at certain times of the year when we get our large chunks of investments. And they ask me, where do you want it placed and the amount of time that you want it placed? And those are two important factors that will contribute to where the rate of return is going to go.
Absolutely.
We made a decision a couple of years ago not to go out with investments beyond 6 months or a year.
And that's not what I'm talking about.
I'm just trying to give you some...
So, Joe, for me...
No, I mean, this is pretty simple, actually, I think. All you're doing is saying, this is what we're doing with our money. PMA has this consortium, and you're gaining... You believe value from
we're gaining buying power by sheer volume.
We believe we're gaining
power.
We don't know that we are. We may have 6 years ago or 4 years ago whenever we did it. But the world changes mm-hmm. awful quick. That technology guy in the corner will tell you that in a second. And technology in the financial markets has made everybody more efficient on the cost side of things. So you may be, and I'm not saying you're not, you may have the perfect system. But I know this, and I think it's important with the taxpayers' money to make sure, is it every month? No, it's not every month. Is it every quarter? You got to convince me it's not. Is it every year? Absolutely every year. But I'm going back to every quarter that I know that our other financial partners, they cannot beat your deals. Now, I'm not saying go move it to riskier. No, I'm risk-adjusting this analysis, this conversation. And that's what I started with when I said the safety. That's by far the highest thing we have to consider here. But you're comparing apples to apples with these institutions. That's what I would be doing in your position. I think it's important, as a taxpayer, I think that's what should happen with my tax dollars, that you're vetting it as often as possible. Bob, you could tell me that's 40 hours of work every quarter, and I don't think it is, because on the other side, these people want your business. Don't let them waste your time, do all those things. Manage it the way you need to manage it. But at some level, we need to feel confident, I need to feel confident, that our constituents' tax dollars are earning the highest return for the risk model that you believe this district should have. That's all I'm asking.
So,
I basically have kind of three points. I think to Joe's point, I suppose we could have PMA come in and really address these issues. I'm sure they would do that.
But I don't think that's necessary.
But I think it might be, and just say, you know what? I mean, if we have these, if we have some, I don't want to say issues, but we have questions. We have some.
I'm not questioning PMA, though. I don't want to miss anybody misunderstanding. I think that the financial officer's job of the district, I hope they're doing it everywhere else, at the high school where my tax dollars go, Park District, everywhere my tax dollars come, they're looking at their pool of cash and saying, I'm, for my risk tolerance, I am not just, there's a consortium. It makes sense to me that, yes, they should have the best pricing. They should have the best fee structure. They should. But should and do are two different things, especially in today's marketplace, because people have become so much more efficient given overhead
so
efficiency ratio.
So what are you asking?
I guess...
I've asked it twice, so if I'm not communicating, I'm
looking. So what would it... No, I think the best way to do it, what would it look like to you? Would it look like what that is, well, we went out to another like PMA and said, here's our...
That's what I'm
so, sorry, we're, I mean, the non... Yeah. You guys are a little confused. I'm just going to be
PMA,
honest.
Yeah, PMA provides you certain services.
Yeah.
Right? For certain dollars.
Got it.
Not for the dollars they have.
Got it.
For far less dollars than they have, is my guess.
Okay.
If you're telling me you have to have every dollar with them for them to provide you those services, then maybe what I'm asking
then we would
is,
look at PMA.
Then we would look at PMA.
Yeah.
Right. But I don't think that's the case. Now, if you...
We have a lot with PMA.
Yeah,
I guess
we have smaller investments with other local companies.
But I mean,
I understand what you're asking.
I mean, there's a level. If PMA services to us, Paul, mean that what's the total amount invested?
So $30 million.
I always think it's $30 million. And their threshold to give us those services is 10. Then the other 20 is what my conversation is about. If it's 29. Million, then what Patrick said, they need to come in here and do it. Do those. Is it really worth 29 all you're doing? I don't think it's that. I think the threshold's lower, and so then the delta between what the threshold is and what we're investing is where the chief investment officer needs to be quarterly looking at that money and saying, am I getting the most bips for it relative to my risk tolerance model I put up for the district?
And I per PMA versus two other companies. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. I just want to make sure I'm on the same page that I'm looking at PMA and then going to two other corporations like them and saying, what would you do for this amount?
Absolutely.
Exactly. Okay.
That's an oranges company.
That's all I wanted to.
Free,
that was,
right?
I was.
PMA takes a cut of.
Swimming up water there for a little bit.
So just saying, hey, I have two oranges here. And
yeah.
PMA is acting as a middleman. What if I go down the block and look at something else?
I think there's a missing piece with PMA. And you know there are some things that they do.
Yeah, I'm not missing that. That's a threshold conversation.
Well, no, it's not so much the threshold, but there's some, and I believe that this is the case. There's some value-added things that they do above and beyond just managing the funds, and that's some of the additional analysis that they do. And again, if we're going to go and look at oranges. Then you know whoever's gonna look at make sure that
I don't think that's what Joe's saying. Joe's saying let's not look for another PMA unless you're seeing PMA as the investment.
Well, how else would we kind of gauge? We're getting.
It's simple. To me it is, and I think I've answered this question, but. PMA provides us services over and beyond the investments that we make. There are all this reporting, blah, blah, blah. I'm not going to go into it. Bob can give us a laundry list. I don't want the laundry list. For that, there's a threshold we need to invest with them.
Minimum investment.
Minimum investment to get all these services. If you now tell me that's 20-something million and that's why we have it with them, then I'm going to circle around with what Patrick said and say, now bring PMA in, and now... Are we getting a bang for our buck for all those services? Because if you're losing something, you're paying for it. I mean, you're paying 10 bips to them to manage your money. Maybe that's the market. At the end of the day, all I'm asking is break it all down. Let's make sure we're getting a competitive group looking at our portfolio, providing the same risk analysis, taking PMA's services we get. We pay for those services. It's a minimum balance. That's the level.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. After that, everything else is what I want you to analyze. A month from now, when I find out the answers, when I find out that maybe the answers are they're giving you the best bang for your buck on investments, no more questions. But if you find out they're not, then what really are you paying for those services? This is the logical step next that I would have if I found out there was a big delta between the investment return we get with them.
So why don't we start there? Because you're kind of making some assumptions, I think, in your argument, it sounds like.
No.
But what I'm hearing is you're assuming there's something wrong. Let's find out some data.
No.
That's the way it's coming up.
I get it. I think
really, to really quantify everything so we understand what we're getting, I think it makes sense to have them come out and give us a presentation.
Show us
the threshold.
Until I understand what the competition is offering on its investments relative to what we're getting from PMA, I don't know that I would get everything out of that presentation. What I'm requesting is find out what the threshold, what is the threshold? If we don't, do you know it?
Okay.
Obviously an important fact, because we're paying for services through the amount of investments we have. Everybody does this with brokerage houses.
So you're looking for Bob to get data from other like investment institutions, maybe MB, folks that we already work with, so that we can see if there's a little gap, no gap, some gap, whatever it might be. And then the next step in the conversation would occur.
I guess the first step is to figure out what the threshold is. I mean, we until we know what the threshold is.
The threshold is everything we have there. We're barely meeting the minimum, then you got to back up. I bet that's not the case, because otherwise the services they're providing us is not.
Well, I have a pretty good idea in terms of what you're looking for, and I'll bring this back for discussion, probably not in 2 weeks, but in the near future.
And to me, it's, at the end of the day, this is something, if you deem it appropriate from where you're sitting, that over the next 3 months, you'll have our financial partners provide you a presentation under the risk guidelines that you set.
What they might be interested in providing for us for investment.
My guess is they'll do that in about 24 business hours. 24 hours.
There's another piece to this, just from a policy standpoint. In our policy, when we changed the financial policy, what's the timeline? I mean,
annually I review this as I did the financial security of the firms that we deal with. We also have where we annually, or at least every time the board reconvenes after an election, we approve the existing financial partners that we have. And those are essentially, right now we have MB, PMA, and then Wintrust, Flood Out, Glen Allen, and Glen Allen and Wheat Bank. So now we're our third partner with Wintrust. So I've got a pretty good idea in terms of what you're looking for, and I will certainly give it some significant thought, and I'll bring you some information back. I appreciate it. Okay. Okay, we're on 7:10, and we have two pretty significant conversations to happen in the next 20 minutes. The next one is the FGM contract renewal. This is annually about the time of the year when I bring you a recommendation to renew our contract with FGM for architectural services. This year is a little bit or significantly different maybe than what they have been previously, in that we're in the middle of a major construction project that we're due to conclude sometime next year. So what I've done is I've had Ron prepare. You have a brief board report. You also have the contract behind it. And basically what I've had him do is divide it up into amendments. And so Amendment 30 is regarding general services that would be required of basically any architectural firm that we do business, with. And it's used really to provide, if I need a question answered, if I need consultation, whatever I need, that would come under the blanket of general services. Then we talked about master planning, which is Amendment 31. We have just really begun our conversations in terms of master facility planning for Phase 2 and what's that going to look like. I do not have a price in there right now. The conversation is just getting started. My intention is to provide you with a sort of an umbrella type of contract here. But should we react to certain things, such as this master facility planning, or capital projects within the next year, we will bring you an updated report that will show what the cost implications are for that, because we simply don't know what they are now, except for the mobile classroom evaluation, which is $3,500, and a roof evaluation, which I think is $1,500. So right now, other than things being built on a time and material basis, nothing has been brought to the Finance Committee or to the Board that would change sort of the basic structure of this contract. I've asked Ron to come in this evening. If you have any questions, I'm sure Ron can address them, or I'll do my best to address them. But my thought was is that we're working without a contract right now, and that made me feel a little uncomfortable, so I wanted to bring the bones of the contract to you. And if we have updates, whether it's a capital project or a master facility planning, you know, we'll ask Ron to go back, give us what his price is, and then I'll re-present it to the board with a solid price for you to make a decision on.
So will the board be approving these amendments coming up based on this?
Based upon this, the board will approve the contract as it is, but I will be asking for your approval for Amendment 31 under Master Facility Planning. Ron, I need you to go back. Tell me what it's going to cost you to do this Phase 2 Master Facility Planning. And then I'll bring you a recommendation.
When is the approval to the board? It's going to be in 2 weeks, or is there a discussion?
Approval for this
for
contract?
This one.
This one is going in 2 weeks for discussion, and then it'll be for the board for approval in 4 weeks.
Okay. So if we could ask questions then specific to amendments, does that sound good?
Sounds fine with me. However you would like to proceed.
I'm going to direct my discussion to one amendment. It's Amendment 34 regarding the services regarding the roofs for the Abraham Lincoln, Ben Franklin, and Hadley. We have a total project budget. This seems to be more specific and not just time and materials. Am I correct? Because you said everything's time and materials, but this one's not. $900,000 for total project, $750,000 for what I would call is everything excluding architectural compensation.
Soft costs.
And that's where I kind of wanted to drill down, because there's a lot of soft costs in this contract with doing the coring and all these other consultants. You will be hiring consultants to do this work. Because it's $150,000 of consulting in here, of soft costs for $750,000 of roofs. Right? Is that that's, in summer?
I mean, that $150,000 is more your cost associated with the capital project recommendation.
Any cold inspections, and you're right, roof cores, any infrared inspections, anything else, that's a budget amount.
Yeah, it's a big number. It's $150,000. Right. Hard cost is $750,000.
Correct.
And it's soft cost of $150,000.
Depending what the scope is, because there's no scope defined. That's an allowance for the district.
And we have not defined any capital projects.
Now you see why I'm struggling with it. There's no, this is for the roofs, specifically.
To be honest with you, we have no specific recommendations regarding capital projects at this time. It could or could not be for a roof.
Then why do we have numbers? They're all just pulling it out of the air.
I mean, that's what you normally budgeted for your infrastructure improvements on an annual basis.
We typically budget $1 million a year or $1 million annually for capital projects, whether it's a roof, whether it's a parking lot, a boiler, or whatever it is. We work around $1 million total cost figure.
But this is specific to roof replacement.
That you're absolutely right.
So you're answering me, I'm sorry, but this is going to get adversarial if we're going around what I'm talking about. I mean, this is roof replacement, unless I'm reading it wrong. It's not capital budget items for fixing sidewalks or fixing anything else at this time. This is specifically for roofs, this amendment.
Okay.
So you understand, because that's not what you guys just said.
Well, I made a general comment in terms of what the district has done historically.
Speak specifically to Amendment 34 now. Because if we're getting off base, I'm not going to understand you.
Can I ask a question? I know that it was last year, and maybe the year before, that Bob, you had laid out the kind of age-nice lessons plan and looked at groups. You gave us, was it with you guys? he gave us schematics and then highlighted in color, right, the different portions.
And I had a lot of questions.
Right, and I know we talked about that. So is that related back to this?
It's all related.
Yeah, so all those we might do, because the roofs are done in segments, we might do this portion or this portion. Just depends on what
just
it looks like.
Depends on what seems to be the most urgent
right.
section of a roof.
Outside of the grant money that we have for Lincoln, which we decided to do because we're going to lose the grant.
Right, 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 yes.
And well, and well, I understand this.
No, that was my education, because I wanted to make sure that
I hear
understood
the I'm in a state that I don't understand this amendment. I'm going to struggle approving it based on how it's written. Because we're talking about $150,000 of soft costs.
Which is what? Which is roughly 20% of the project.
Right, which just seems extraordinarily high to me. And I know we don't even know the scope of it. So then I'm like, if we don't even know the scope of it, if our goal is to approve 8% compensation of basic services on a hard cost number, and it's going to be broken into three segments, construction documents at 60, bid at 10, and contract administration services at 30. If that's what we're talking about, that reads different than the amendment the way I read today.
Can I clarify something?
Please do, because I'm
this was an allowance based on historical budgeting models for the district. If, for example, you did $400,000 worth of roofing, our fee would still be the same, 8%. That's your soft cost plus whatever else, cores or whatever else would go with it. So it's going to float until we get that low bid.
Yeah, I understand. I feel very uncomfortable with the soft cost on this. I don't know what you historically did, but I'd want to make sure we're not paying you guys a fee based on the soft cost. So if you go and get cores that cost $10,000 instead of $2,000, we're not paying you, $640 more. So you don't have an incentive of making it higher than I can see. But to me, it's just such a large number, and I want to vet this a little more personally before I voted yes to this amendment, because I look at these soft costs that we're projecting, and if there's a roof expert here, I'm willing to listen to them to tell me that it makes sense. And then I'm going to hit my one point that I always hit on it. I really think we're such a good customer, that's what I hear, I would prefer that I have more than one site visit per week. This is 2.8.2. It says once, and you may not need to come by more than once, but I want to make sure that I'm not paying for extra site visits. And in this case, if it's 3 months of work, I want to make sure that we're covered if we need you here. An incident on one of these roofs where I'm not paying for the second site visit. And you said you would throw it in and all that, but if you will, then put it in the contract. Is what I said last time we came across this, one of the contracts. And I thought it would get tossed in, and I prefer that it does.
So just to be clear, are you asking for an as-needed construction administration, or are you looking for 2 days a week?
I'm looking for 2 days a week.
2 days a week.
Yeah, that's what I said. I just think, it's something that you're going to be out here. It's nice. You're our partner.
Sure.
I think partner's price is coming 2 days a week. So I don't understand the numbers in there. I'm fine with the 8% thing. I don't want to give the misrepresentation of that. I just start reading all this and the numbers on soft cost.
Joe, how about this, if I may? Why don't we identify the project over the next few weeks, and then let's just put this one on hold. Put this amendment 34 on hold. We'll identify the project and then push it through.
I'm fine with the 8% though.
Okay.
I'm not questioning it. The way it reads, I feel like I'm losing control of my expenses.
So are you suggesting then that we continue with the conversation with amendments 30, 31, 32, and 33, and then bring back 34 at some later time?
I'd appreciate it.
Okay.
Bob, I want to want some clarification on one other thing. In looking when I look at your report, You've got basically six buckets of different architectural services based on these amendments. We've really only identified the costs on two of the six.
Correct.
When do you think we would have the other four? I know we've got some questions on that.
Sure. It would be when I'm given instructions to move forward with a master facility planning or a capital projects plan. That's when I would bring you back. That's when I would bring you back updated financial information.
Now, but don't you have some budgeting that you've done, so you could have rough numbers based on your budget.
That's not what we want to do. I mean, because that's what I just heard we don't want to be doing.
Yeah.
We want actuals. This is what the contract's for.
I can read the contract and the percentages and all that.
Oh, no, I'm not. I'm just pushing back on Drew is what I just heard pretty loud and clearly was. Yeah. I think everybody knows where it was from. that we don't want to give estimates. So I just want to make sure the two board members are giving Bob clarity on this issue, because I don't want I want clarity on this issue from the board to Bob, and I want to make sure that we have consensus as well. Just to finish up, I need to make sure that the board gives consensus to Bob so he does this work, and it's not a one board member telling.
Can I explain myself?
Yo, yeah, please.
Sure. At the end of the day, the real costs are what matters, because these are all percentages based on that. So I'm fine with the percentages, the way it's reported. Ultimately, we get to approve the dollar amounts on these projects. And so to have them, not pick them on a thing here or have Bob spend the time to do that, when eventually we're going to see them, and we can choose to do them or not. Because last year we chose not to do some of those.
Yeah.
And they didn't test it. So, I am fine with just now understanding the percentages. The issue I have with the 34 is that the soft costs are bothering me in there. Like, I'm losing control of $150,000. That basically what I want to feel comfortable with is that Ron's comfortable with having control of $150,000 of our budget. Ultimately, because I have to know where that's going before I can approve an amendment that says, basically, in that example, that that's happening. So, seeing all the estimates to me, I don't need it for this approval because it's percentages and they're competitive to the marketplace, and that's what's important.
So, just for a point of clarification, the 150, it's 8% up to the 120. Is that how you read it?
I read it as if the case that they were doing the project that was proposed based on the estimates they had in the past, the $750,000 hard cost, they're roughly going to get $60,000+ as a fee, and the other $80,000+ is other soft costs that are listed out on there, pretty much the core.
Yeah, but Bob controls that. We don't control anything beyond our fee. He controls all of the other soft costs. That has nothing to do with
it. Okay, well, that's, I want to get an understanding.
Yes.
I don't understand why it's in the contract. I think it's been a disservice to you, because all you're getting is 8%
yes,
of the hard
correct.
Cost.
Yes.
And I don't think you should have that in the contract where it's talking about all these things.
So what you're saying is 8% of the overall cost to whatever that project may be. We'll bring you the roofs project. We will estimate it at this cost. You will ultimately earn 8% of that cost.
And
not putting in $750,000 for X job that we don't have.
I
get it.
It's a good representation of what's occurring.
I appreciate it. No, it's good. It's great pushback. All right, with a very limited time.
Yeah.
Talk about that.
You're good.
Another item that I had asked of me was to prepare revenues, expenses, and prepared actual to budget. And that's not the right spreadsheet.
Is it the one that you handed out?
It's the one I handed out. This is not the right one. Michael, I'm looking for a spreadsheet.
Here.
Is that yours?
There we go.
Okay.
Okay. So this is as of June. Take J and K columns, but those are just for my uses. You can take, I was asked to prepare an analysis on a cash basis in terms of what our revenues and expenses were
actual to budget. So what I've done is, over here you can see that our property tax budget exceeded the budget amount, the actual amount received exceeded the budget by $634,000. I want to explain to you a little bit in terms of what that is. That $634,000 is the amount of taxes that we received in May and June of this year for last year's levy. I budget on a cash basis, so my dollars here represent what the levy was 2 years ago, because we take a CPI in December, we use that for the following December, and then we levy in the following year, and it's used in the following year. So there's like a 2 year overlay. So that's something I've always been asked by our financial partners to budget on a cash basis. So this number, I think, misrepresents what it amounts to, because it was very close to what, I mean, I only levy in terms of what I can levy, and that's the method that I use to budget. So we did receive more in terms of personal property taxes. I'm going to just say that it's, I believe it's a result of continuing economic conditions here in the state of Illinois. It's a corporate personal property replacement taxes.
Okay.
Tuition, we're under budget by $214,000. And if you would notice, when you get your July financial statement tonight, you'll see that we already received about $300,000 or $380,000. This is tuition that I bill out to other districts that where we house a program in our district. So it's kids from other districts that we're managing under our roof. But it's special ed. So it's vastly understated this year, but we've already received. In other words, we agreed everybody would pay their bills by June 30th, but not everybody did. So I got the money in July. Well, in July of this year. So that's why that number is so far off.
And Bob, I apologize, but if we could suspend this conversation and pick it up in our next financial meeting, it's already 7:27. I want to make sure that everyone has a moment, quick changeover, okay, to start again at 7:30. We'll start right here again. I apologize, but 7:27.
This is a great spreadsheet. I appreciate the one you wrote it out. The one they have on the phone.
Oh, okay.
All right.
It did give the comparison that we did.
Right, and I gave it something else too.
All right.
Yeah.
We're done.
Okay.